This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Baker Mayfield, undraftable, off my board.
The Cleveland Browns select Baker Mayfield.
Hi guys, welcome in. This is now the second session of our OBR Chalk Talk sessions where we are going to break down, we're going to talk about different sides of the football. We've started on defense. We are going to continue to talk about both sides of the football, and we're going to kind of segue from the basics of defense last week with kind of your play calls. I have a link on the OBR channel where we looked at simplistic defensive playbook things. We talked about gap fitting, kind of just gap structures where players kind of call the A, B, C, D gap. And then we looked at player definitions for positions. And then we talked about sub packages, particularly how that pertains to the Browns. So I thought that was pretty informative. If you have not watched that session, obviously you should go to our YouTube page. Subscribe if you have not subscribed. Make sure you go there and find session one. There's a lot to be learned there. Session two, as you guys know, if you've paid attention today, we are going to look at defensive line gaps and techniques, focus on gaps a little bit more, talk about those techniques, 1-2-3-4, 4-eye shade, all that fun stuff you hear people reference all the time. And then we're going to talk about basic run fits, which is how, put it this way, if you've not heard of the word run fits, it's basically how the picture comes together for a defense. What are you responsible for on any given play? So that is the goal today. We have a nice presentation that I think will bring this all together. We're going to bring in John Stephenson, who is our defensive film study guru. More than that, I think he knows both sides of the football pretty well. I'm probably limiting him with just saying defense. So, John, how are you tonight, my friend?
I'm doing great, Jake. Thanks for having me on again.
My pleasure. My pleasure. We are going to jump right in, man. I want to get over here to our slideshow. I'll try to get my fancy marker out again today, just in case we need it, in case you need me to highlight something specifically. Let's go ahead and get going here. So we are going to start with those trigger words, John. Talk to us about why those trigger words are still important to this stuff we're talking about today.
All right. So these trigger words are used to basically convey information about how once the defensive call is made, exactly how the players are going to line up. So when it comes to, moving later into run fits, defending the run, those ideas, we just want to review these because we're going to be using them a lot. And then once we get into the passing game and coverages and so on, they'll be there as well. So a formation will have a solid side and a flex side. The side with the inline tight end is going to be your solid side. That's generally where we're setting our strength to, as we'll look at in a second. A flex side is when you have a slot receiver, not always a slot receiver, but generally there's a slot receiver there. Oftentimes that's your pass strength. When we talk strong and weak sides of the formation here, we're talking specifically the pass strength. But again, that's a conversation for a little further down the road. Left and right, and although we don't see it here, we also talked about field and boundary, with field being the wide side of the field and boundary being the short side, although as you said, that the NFL is primarily a middle of the field game because the hash marks are very narrow, so it's just not as important as it is to college football and high school football, where the hashes are much, much wider. So when you get a ball on a hash mark to the field, then there's a ton of room to work with there. So how you attack it, how you defend it becomes a bit more important.
Yeah, it is. So what we're going to try to do our best here is talk about mentioning these trigger words as we go through. So solid, flex, strong, we're going to talk weak side, strong side. We're going to talk the directional call, what it would be ahead of time, Let's keep going. So calling the defense, I think you hear people reference the green dot. Typically, John, you can attest to this. Typically, it's a linebacker at any level. You'll see either teams in high school will signal something in. Some coaches have wristbands these days that they do, right? Signals are the most popular defensive thing. In the NFL, you get the green dot helmet, meaning you are, as a defensive coordinator, able to communicate up to, I believe, the 15-second mark. You can communicate with your player designated on the field. Typically, it is a linebacker. A Mike linebacker plays a high volume of snaps. That was B.J. Goodson last year. They did not bring B.J. back this year. Anthony Walker was only a two-down linebacker, kind of early down player for the Colts. He might not be a three-down player here. Could be Jacob Phillips. We'll see. But my money is probably going to be on the green dot player that was brought in, which is John Johnson, who was the guy for the Rams. And Brandon Staley, now the Chargers head coach, had referenced that the Chargers had difficulty in their linebacker grouping, getting any consistency. So they were looking for a guy to handle that role, and they had nobody better than John because he's an excellent communicator, an excellent leader. So he could be, it is the front runner to be the same role here. So talk about, I know you don't have experience with a guy with a radio at the high school level, but just the defense calling, what does it look like? What's the organization, John, of a call? Like, offense is typically formation, motion, play type. Whatever that is. Some teams name their plays. Some teams use number variations for plays, but that's typically it. So how's the defense like to do it?
So when you're calling, when you're signaling a defense as a coordinator, you have to have at least two parts to your call. So you're going to have the front, and it can be an over front, an under front, tight, whatever your terminology, specific part of me language is there, and also the coverage. So at a bare minimum, you're going to have a front and a coverage. Now, when you're playing those check with me teams or those teams that want a fastball and just go, 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 what you will do is take some of your base stuff and you'll turn that into a one word call or, a very quick, simple visual signal, even if it's just something like base. So you just have to have times, or there are times where you must be able to communicate it, just get it in ASAP because there's no time to do it. Anything that's going to take more than a couple of seconds for the players to see. Oftentimes it's just something as simple as saying base, 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 and getting to your base front and your base coverage and taking it from there. But in addition to that front and the coverage, if there's some sort of stun on with the defensive line, that's going to be in there. Oftentimes there'll be specific coverage checks even within a call. So an example from my experience, even in high school, there are times where we, let's say I signal in a front and a coverage. Let's say we're going to play cover one, man coverage. So in my system, we name coverages by color. So that's black. But in addition to that, we play our safeties different ways. So sometimes we want to middle of the field, post safety, just, playing deep, one big giant zone. Other times we'll have a double team in by game plan on a certain player. So we want them to lean on one side. So it can be something as simple as adding double team calls like vice or – let's see here. I'm drawing a blank right now because I'm live here. Vice, cone, and so on. But you get the idea here. So your front, your coverage is your base, but oftentimes there are going to be several other additions onto it. But like with offense, you don't really want to be too verbose with it. The shorter the better, particularly when you're working with high school kids.
Yeah, you want to eliminate as much much of that as possible. And I know that it got to the point where, on the offensive side, which is where I have most of my experience, it's the least amount of communication, the better. I mean, because you don't want a bunch of – what's the famous Chris Sims clip where he's trying to call a 14-word –
Yeah, it's in those West Coast guys.
Yeah. So,
it's crazy.
We would label things by type. So we would have, any inside zone. We would have – so this is an example, John. This is something that we did. We had two dead words. You could say any two words at the beginning. You could say any word at the beginning and any word at the end. Literally anything. It could be Ohio, 334, Michigan. It could be whatever. And in the middle of that, the numbers are what's important. So 3 is going to tell us it's an inside zone type. 34 tells us what type of inside zone that is. So that's just an example of a play. You signal in a formation. Everybody's looking at the sideline. The play, 334 is what is important. The name, the two words that surround it that your quarterback can change to anything he wants. It could be Sponge 334 Bob. It could be anything. Mm-hmm. It's just meant to throw the defense off. So that was kind of the point of what you do. And the beauty of why we like to do that for those those young men playing football at that level, and even into college, is like, you don't want to think much. You just keep it simple, mm-hmm. the KISS method, and go. So that's what they try to do. Now, you know, the NFL, you don't see much hurry up because there's not much of an advantage from hurry up. So, you know, you can have a guy on the field getting radio calls. You can have a secondary guy who could come in if something happens to somebody else. So you have a second guy, but like, yeah, that's the general crux, is that since nobody really runs hurry up that often, it's a huddle situation for both sides. So it's less a problem because you're not, as a guy on the sideline, looking to the sideline, you have to rely on your play caller to be able to receive your message, right, John, and send it in. So it's less strenuous when I can hear somebody talking in my helmet and just repeat what they're saying. It's a lot easier. So
yeah, at our point, it's all visual. It's all
100%. 100%. So let's keep rolling, man. Let's talk about in the huddle. So go through this if you can. I know you guys on the audio side can't see it, but we're talking defense communication in the huddle and before the snap.
Yeah, so in every defense, there are going to be certain players that are responsible for certain things each and every time. And obviously, that's to eliminate any uncertainty, make sure that the snap of information is being stated. So generally, your mic's going to be your guy that actually receives the play call, as you said. He's got that radio in his helmet. In my case, you know, this is high school football. He's the guy that's eyes are immediately towards the sideline. He's looking at the coach for the signal, you know, whoever's live, he's a dummy. And then he's the one that's repeating it to the defense. And then at that point, it's on all the rest of them to echo the call back and, you know, the hand signals and so on. In this case, and again, we're assuming that because the Browns are running this defense here, this is, you know, Seattle cover three style defense, that they probably, you know, they're probably following along pretty closely here. So I'm going to guess that, you know, Mike will free safety, strong safety, as we see here, probably how they do it, but not necessarily. And as you said, depending on the strengths of your personnel and who you have. And sometimes, frankly, your highest football IQ guy might be in the secondary, like we suspect we might have here. So, you know, if he needs to step in and take that role, then he's going to do it. Whatever's just going to be most efficient and cause the fewest mistakes. So, again, our Mike's the defensive signaler. He's the play caller. Our Will, in this case, looks like he's responsible for the down and distance, but it's always nice to have at least one player responsible for that, whether it's a linebacker or not. Obviously, down and distance dictates many of the situations you see. A lot of the film work you do during the week that breaks or looks at tendencies, you know, they're D&D related. So it's important for everyone to have that. Free safety is going to call out the offensive personnel. So in this case, kind of going back to what we talked about last week, looking at, do we have three receivers and a tight end and a tailback? Are we in 1-1 personnel? Are we in 2-1 personnel with a halfback, a fullback, and a tight end? Are we in, you know, 1-0 personnel with one tailback and, you know, no tight ends or four wide receivers? So all that's important because, again, it helps guys line up. But, two, it also, going back to your tendencies and your film study, it really cues you as to what the offense likes to do out of these groups. And offenses tend to be very, very tendency-based, as redundant as that sounds. They're tendency-based based on the personnel groups. So, again, important to have across. Finally, here they say strong safety is responsible for the defensive personnel. So I'm guessing they mean that he's the one that's got to check it on the field, just make sure that, you know, if our base group's out, for example, that everyone that's supposed to be in that base group is on the field right there, and we don't have Nickel out there for some reason, although there'd be coaches up in the booth. You know, helping with that as well. Past that, we can go through this before the snap stuff pretty quick. All of this is just who's responsible for calling out the formations, the checks, the adjustments, stuff like looking under safeties, forced to side. So who's going to be the contained defender? That Roy Liu and that Rita Linda, those describe safety rotation. So if you're playing with a single high safety, you know, is the safety dropping down to the left or the right? You know, so on and so forth.
Cover all that in coverage stuff as we get there. So don't worry about those things. We'll talk through them. But this is just stuff that the things that they need to understand. Everybody has a role on defense, except for most of your front guys. They you know, the big uglies, they just want to make sure they're breathing okay at that point, right? Yeah. keep those guys from passing out on the field. But yeah, this is great, John. These are what your roles are. You know, everybody has one thing they're trying to identify in the back half, and you said the corners are gonna look at wide receiver split variations where they're lining up wide. Are they going to use the inside of the field? So on and so forth. Good stuff here. This is really good stuff. And the Browns will do – every team might do this differently. This is just a general thing here. Like, there's going to be wrinkles and variations to basically what players can handle and what players can't. Some guys can't handle these things. Question here from Ronald. There's some questions up here. Ronald, I'll get to your question about Lamar Jackson at the end, I promise. We're going to get to that JOK question from the long report at some point as well. This one, what's the biggest transition from pre-snap to post-snap for defense? I'll throw that one to you. It's interesting. Like, what's your biggest transition from pre to post?
Well, I'm not sure what. Can we get a little more clarification on that as far as transition from? Yeah, I'm not quite sure why that.
I'm not totally sure there either. If you Rob, can clarify a little bit more of what you're asking there, we'll come back to you on that one.
Definitely.
Yeah, we'll keep going for now, but we'll come back to that one if you clear that up for us, Rob. So here is after the snap, right? So talk through a little bit of what you want your guys doing immediately at the snap.
Yeah, the run pass call is huge, and that involves the sideline as well. So, you know, we got our guys reading keys, looking for their run pass key. It's going to be unique by position and by position group. But the sooner you can figure out if it's a run or a pass, the sooner you can get into your responsibility, whether it's, you know, run fit, whether it's coverage, you know, whatever it might be. So anything that can speed that up, even, you know, part of a second, will, you know, will help move things along and get guys in the position they need to be in quicker. Looking at the play stuff, obviously, you know, screens, draws, sprint out plays, bootlegs, reverses, all that. Again, guys aren't, depending on where their eyes are at, they're not necessarily going to see these things right as they're happening. So you just want to give them a cue or a heads up or an alert that this is, you know, this is coming here.
Particularly this is something you'll hear from the sideline, right, John? Like, yes. You're at a lower level game. Run pass right away. Go ahead.
Our entire sideline gives run pass calls. And then when the ball's thrown in the air as well, when the ball goes out, they all yell ball as loud as they can to let the DBs know, particularly we're in man coverage. But we also try and get, like, screen, for example. If someone recognizes screen blocking again, you know, frankly, defensive linemen, once they get their eyes on that quarterback, and it generally takes them a second or two to recognize that the blockers just let them by for a reason and they didn't just, you know, pull off the pass rush move. Excuse me. Oh, pardon me. The pass rush move of their life. Pardon me. You know, and they're about to get a sack here. So, you know, anything that's going to tell them, hey, you need to retrace your steps right now. Staying with draws, sprints, you know, bootlegs generally come off play actions. So, again, alerting that this is, you know, pass, and guys need to punch out and get to their cover spot right there. Just, again, it's anything that's going to move guys along to get them where they need to be.
Yeah, and then DBs and linebackers are calling out any route concepts, you know, in call. Yeah. If you got a read key and there's an in call that happens. These are just things that if you hear like a mic'd up session, these are things that you would hear. Like if you go back and watch John Johnson's mic'd up, these are communication things that happen all the time. If you're over number two or you're over number one and you're reading one to two, you get an immediate in route. You're going to hear in and in. You're going to hear concepts thrown out. China, you have here listed China, race, I'm here. Those communication things happen. Back when I was playing in my college days, our defense had a communication that they would say Gilligan pre-snap. That would mean they were in quarters, which is cover four. Mm-hmm. And that would mean that the play side safety over where the ball was snapped was looking up number three and three by one. So that means trips to a side. The safety away from trips is going to read number three. He's going to read that nearest inside receiver. And he's not going to really help that corner out. So they called Gilligan because that tells you what is Gilligan corner.
We have something similar in that exact coverage. You call an island for the backside corner. We say island, exactly. Island.
Yep. And it was just a different playbook, different verbiage. They'd call Gilligan, which meant you're on an island, essentially one-on-one, which I used to love that as a quarterback because that would be opportunistic throws there. So, yeah, they're just little things like that. There's so much communication that, unfortunately, when you're in – I know last year wasn't the case with only 15,000 fans or so, but when you're in a packed First Energy Stadium, you don't hear these things. That's what makes the mic'd up stuff experience that HBO does or Showtime or whoever. Those are what are so unique and really cool because you can hear – there's so much communication, right, John? I think we might know like 2% of the communication that happens on any given play, and I know that was something that I love to do this past year. I'd plug my headphones in after – a couple days after the game, I rewatched it a few times just to hear, because in these empty stadiums, you could hear so much of this stuff. You could easily hear the center making play call adjustments, but calling out the mic, calling out
sliding the protection. Yeah.
Oh yeah, JC Treader was so audible last year, man. It was really cool. But yeah, this is a small window into that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly that. And I should say that particularly on pass plays, like your secondary, your coverage guys, they're going to be communicating each and every, I mean, it happens each and every play. And if it doesn't, then something's wrong there because, you know, they have a certain set of rules they follow based on what receivers do and where they go. So they have to, you know, communicate what's happening with receivers entering or exiting their area to let, you know, their partner next door know something's coming your way. And, you know, like specific concepts that might stretch your defense, like the China concept listed there and so on. But yeah, it's happening each and every play. And again, if it isn't, then something's wrong.
I'm into it. Let's so any opportunity you guys get to listen to those things, do it, because it's there's a ton of things you can learn about how defenses handle things. So we talked about player responsibilities a little bit. Go through this if you can. We got bunch of different subsections here. Go ahead.
Yeah, we'll keep it quick. So we already touched on the mic as far as he's the guy that has the headphones. He's calling the defense. He has to identify the close side of the offensive formation. That's going to be important for setting your front, which we'll get into next. Any other additional front calls or alerts. So maybe certain players in certain spots, formations. You know, maybe their tendencies behind them. So they're gonna alert. They're gonna alert. Maybe something the team likes to do out of it. Again, we already talked about the free safety. He's identifying the offensive personnel, you know, how many tailbacks, how many tight ends, how many receivers are in the game. Strong safety looks like he's double checking the defensive personnel group on the field to make sure that the guys that need to be out there are out there. We got our Will with the down and distance reminder again. As far as these final three sections, I think these are interesting because it really emphasizes just how important and vital communication is, particularly on defense where you are reacting to everything. Whereas on offense, you know, once you get that play call, you know what's going to happen. You know exactly where everyone's going to go or where they should be going. Whereas on defense, pretty much everything you do is based on what, you know, what the offense does, what a key does, what an indicator tells you. So you have to talk. And it's so important that, you know, you get to a certain point where you don't even worry about if the offense is picking up on what you're saying or not, because it's just more important that that everyone is on the same page. Everyone knows the defensive call. Everyone knows the checks, and that everyone, you know, as the play's happening, you know, going post snap, that everyone is aware of, you know, the things they need to know to execute, you know, whatever it is they need to execute there. And as we talked about, I know you talked about it a lot last year, but this defense had communication issues, not only in getting lined up, but also in the blown coverages, you know, guys not being where they were supposed to be, guys, you know,
scrambling and pointing and running around.
Week one, that first or second touchdown they gave up of the season, they were trying in the red zone. They had a two high safeties. They were trying to play a form of, red zone Tampa 2, and one of the safeties played man coverage, chased the receiver. So boom, someone else crosses and comes up, and just, you know, just a laundry list of examples. And looking at the very bottom under that, it's kind of cut off there, but you can see under the heading communication, emphasizing all changes occur quickly, requires concentration and communication. And remember, we have no secrets on defense. So again, they're emphasizing that it does not matter if the offense is going to pick up on what you're saying. That cannot be a worry. You just need to, yell it loud and proud. You need to do the hand signals. You need to do everything you can to ensure that the other 10 guys on the field know exactly what's happening.
I'm with it. And the same with offense. That's a great last quote there. You gotta worry less about the other side knowing what you're doing, because if you're so worried about the other side knowing what you're doing that you overcomplicate things, what's the point? Mm-hmm. You know, you have to be on the same page first and foremost. If you're not, you're putting yourself at a severe disadvantage way too quickly. So,
and frankly,
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. We're good.
All right, so we're going to move to gap. This is wildly important for understanding a lot of football jargon that happens. So we'll go through them one by one. Again, verbiage moves place to place. And this playbook offering that we have here, this is a Vicky is a man head up on the center. Now, we always just called that a nose or a zero.
Zero. Okay? Yeah.
It is typically a thing. You know, if you're talking about broad language, A nose is like a description of the position, specifically when he's head up, right? This is what is called a zero. We just flat out called it a zero. They call it a Vicky in this playbook. Again, it's whatever you want to call it. It's a traditional right up over the center's face, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, okay. Correct.
That's a this good, playbook. Good yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, good point you brought up that there's no universal football terminology. I mean, there are a lot of there's a lot of overlap, but there's just no official dictionary encyclopedia with exactly what this this concept or buzzword means. So.
Well, this is where it does get interesting. We always called, if anybody was in on the right eye or left eye of the center, we would just call it a shade. Now, in this playbook, they call a one over the top of the – this is okay. Again, this is just – you just want to be on the same page. If I go to the sideline and talk to my coach and I say, hey, man, they're showing me a shade and a three tech, I just need to know. I don't care if you want to call it a one, a two-eye, whatever. Just know. In this case, a one is a guy who is shaded to just one side of the center, all right? And then a two-eye is on the inside eye of the guard. So in the things that we will look at in just a moment, the fronts, the Browns fronts, you'll see a two eye and a three tech. Okay. So a two tech would be head up on the guard, right? Straight square up over him. And the end zone view is what's good for this. So you can really see it's hard on the TV view. Right. So, and then a three tech is on the outside eye, outside shoulder of the guard. So that's the most common things you'll hear. You'll hear a shade, a one, a two, or a three. You'll hear a zero for a nose. In this case, in this playbook, they have a two eye, which I totally understand why they do that. It makes sense because, if we're going to call the inside eye of a tackle a four eye, why wouldn't we just call the inside eye of a guard a two eye? I could see that being like a hot button, pour some coffee, have a coach's clinic conversation right there, right?
Right. So, the easiest way to remember this stuff is even numbers are going to be heads up over a player going, again, inside to out. So your zero is going to be heads up over your center. Your two is going to be heads up over your guard. Your four is going to be heads up over your tackle. If you have a tight end, that's going to, he's going to be heads up over your six will be heads up, pardon me, over that tight end. And then once you get to, if you're going to line over the inside shoulder of a player, that's where the eyes come in. So again, a two eyes on your inside shoulder of the guard, your four eyes inside shoulder of the tackle. Many coaches don't use six eyes. So when you see a player that's inside shaded on a tight end, they'll just call that a seven technique. So
that and then sometimes it goes 7-6-9. I've seen that before.
Yeah, or you can get strange. Nine outside shoulder as well. Yeah. So your odd numbers are going to be outside shoulder. Your even numbers are going to be heads up. Your even numbers with an eye are going to be inside shoulder. It's a good rule of thumb to follow. And frankly, this entire numbering system was developed by Bear Bryant. And this is one of those items that's pretty universal across football. Like I've never heard of a staff or a coach or seen a playbook where they didn't use the the numbers like this. Although with some, each are going to have some unique sort of letterings based on the system and so on. Like I've never seen a 4B before this, for example. I've always just seen that as a four, but it's pretty good. This one is pretty universal.
I would agree. I mean, formations like 3x1 formations, some call it trips, some call it tree. Yeah. There's offense gets real wonky, man. But defense, this alignment stuff is generally right. And then we talked about this last week. If we're looking at the gaps again, the gap between the center and guard is the A gap. The gap between the guard and tackle is the B gap. Gap the tackle and tight end the C gap. And then outside of the tight end is D gap. So and on and on and on. If you get an extra, if you got an over formation with an extra guy, you would just bump it out and keep going down the alphabet. So that's the general rule. This is important. You should reference this if you don't ever know it. It is here permanently on the YouTube. So the Browns are a 4-3 defense by nature, John. We're going to talk over and under. Very simple setups for them. Let's go through them.
All right. So your over front is it's your most common front in football. So a majority of your teams spend their time in an over front. Although things like the tight front, which we'll look at later down the road, it's becoming increasingly popular. And certain college teams will spend a lot of time in under fronts, which we'll look at in just a moment. But as a general rule of thumb, your over front is going to be your most common front. And all that means is you're going to take your strong end, your tackle and your mic, and you're going to set them to the run strength or to your solid side. So 9 times out of 10, the solid side or the side with the tight end, as we saw earlier, that's going to be your run strength when as the play is being signaled in. And the front that gives you some type of over, that just tells them that, again, the big end, the tackle, the mic, they're going to go to that tight end side or that solid side with the nose, the weak end or Leo, and the will going opposite that call. So, again, it's just a way of communicating where exactly the defensive line, the linebackers are going to line up, and also the pre-snap gaps that they are responsible for.
Okay. So, general look. Let's go move on and look at what it looks like from an alignment perspective. Here's the wide view of that. Now 2x1 from Pittsburgh. It's actually 3x1. You include the tight end. So let's get to the tight view. The tight view is just the best. Oh, you guys like that fade in and fade out?
That's look amazing. At that.
We pay big money for that.
Playing around on movie player.
There it is. Okay, so run strength. Right? What do we have? What for you guys watching and you guys listening on the podcast, we have a defensive tackle on the outside portion here, the outside shoulder of the guard. What technique do you think that is? I will give you 3 seconds to think about it and see if you can remember.
Yeah, let's see if anyone has chat with this.
You have to be quick. Outside shoulder of the guard to the run strength side. All right, we are just going to write it. The chat group is dead. That's okay. This is a 3-tech.
That's okay.
All right. We got an inside shoulder here of the guard on the opposite side. This would technically be – there's Jason jumping in, giving us a 3-tech answer. A little late, but we'll accept it because it could be a delay.
Yeah, we'll take it.
We'll take it. This is what this playbook calls a 2-I. Kind of commonly referred to as a 1-tech, but this playbook calls it a 2-I. So we'll call it a 2-I.
Call it 2-I, and also a lot of coaches call that a G.
Yes.
Capital G.
Yep. Okay, we have our mic. Right? Mm-hmm. Got three-man side. You got your big end here. Head up. So we're calling that head up. It's a 6. All righty. So that's what we're looking at. Any questions on that? I don't think so. It's I can't really paint a great picture for you guys on the audio side, but we can at least ask you to understand what you're learning. You got Miles on the backside here, kind of wide and turned, and this is technically. Do you deem this a 9 if there's no tight end, or what do you deem?
Yeah,
this
you as know, a lot. Of, yeah, a lot of people call that a wide 9, or just or you could just sometimes coaches will add loose and tight to, so we could say he's a loose 5 technique because he's a bit wider than he would be, but yeah, because he's got that tilt, I would call that a 9.
All righty, we're gonna keep going. Let's go to our under front and talk about the differences in under 2 and over. Whoa, a little too far. There we are. Okay, talk under.
All right, so your under front's just an over front flip. So you're going to make the mic's going to make that solid call to a tight end side. So in this case, looking at the diagram, we have the tight end to our left. So we're going to take the big end and the DT. We're going to send them opposite that solid call. So in this case, to the defense's right. Pardon me. We're going to keep our big end too. It looks like they keep their big end towards the solid side here. So it's the nose and the tackle that are exchanging positions here. Although most under fronts, from what I've seen, they'll just flip everything. So the end that aligns with the DT, they'll both flip sides. You know, the weak end and the nose, they will flip sides as well. But in this case, it looks like the nose and the tackle are the only players that are flipping here. But the important piece is your 3 technique D tackle is going opposite the close call. Okay. Obviously, that's going to change. Go right ahead.
Let's look at it in our up-close view here. Again, another 3x1 look, this time from the Colts. So we don't have any inline tight end, but let's just go through and do a quick quiz on things we know. Okay. I consider this still on the outside leverage here on the guard. So what will we call this? Inside a line. Pretty much on the guard there. So I would say outside guard, we're going to name this a 3. All right. And then here gets tight, but they would probably still call this a 2-I. right? Okay. So right, remember, run call. Got to look where's the my line drawing sucks. Okay, got nice balance here. Right? Boy, that's great. That's great drawing. Another wide nine.
Freaking Picasso here.
Freaking Picasso. A couple loose alignments here. Put Olivier Vernon in a 2-point. They will do that with Clowney this year too. But yeah, if you want to add anything there, John, feel free.
No. In this case, we don't have a tight end. So this, and because we don't have a tight end, they are probably running an under here because they want to take that B gap linebacker that would normally be, let's see, to the defense's right side on the screen. They want to get him a little closer to the trip side, so yep. they flip the front here to do it. We can keep it moving.
Okay. All right, let's take a look at some practical action and talk about – we're going to talk run fits, basic run fits. So talk to me about what gapped out means for cover three base and as we kind of dip our toe into run fits.
All right, so, as you already talked about before a bit, run fits just refer to each player's responsibility versus their run. So they need to be somewhere. They can be, what we call primary fit. So you're someone that has a gap, already assigned pre-snap. Mm-hmm. Other players can be secondary types or have secondary gaps, not to be confused with just a secondary player. Something like a middle of the field safety who's going to play contain, and so on. So Ohio State runs this defense. Ohio State's running the same defense the Browns run. This is straight out of Seattle. I believe Jeff Howard brought it over. So I wanted to quickly show this the slide I have from a clinic talk that their secondary coach gave last year, because when they're looking at sort of the essence or the overall philosophies of this defense, the very first item on this list is stopping the run. And then below that, you'll see gapped out one-dimensional. So I want to talk about what exactly gapped out means, because it informs everything that the team does in terms of how they want to go about stopping the run. And once you see it here, it's very easy to understand. So gapped out simply means that each gap, each available gap the offense presents has a defender assigned to it. So at your most basic form, if we have five offensive linemen, we have six gaps. So for five offensive linemen, we have six dedicated defenders to each of those gaps. We have two A-gap defenders, two B-gap defenders, two C-gap defenders. As we continue to add blockers to the backfield, then we continue adding defenders to, to our run fit and to the primary run fit, to handle the new D-gap that's created on either side, or a new E-gap or whatever it is. So when we say gapped out, we simply mean that each gap has an assigned defender. That's it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's go through visual evidence of what it means to look gapped out here. So we are Texans third quarter. I believe this is week 10. We're going to look at an inside zone example. Okay.
Okay. So we'll just go straight to the tight view. I think it'll be easier to see there.
Okay.
All right, so we call these, or many coaches will call these home fits or home gaps. So something that we have to understand in order to really, really get into run fits is that gaps can move. So, the gap that you see or that you have post or pre-snap, pardon me, might not be the gap that you have post-snap. And we'll look at situations in which that happens a little further on here. But when your pre-snap gap in your post-snap gap align, when it doesn't change, then you're in your called a home fit. So that gap was your home to start the play. That gap is going to be your home to end the play. So looking at this alignment here, let's go from the right side of the screen to the left side of the screen and maybe just draw who's in this gap. And then, look at what's happening going into the play there. So we have a wide nine out here. It looks like Claiborne. He's going to be our C-gap defender to that side. We have Goodson in the B-gap right there. Okay, pretty easy.
And most of these are alignment based, right?
Mm-hmm. We got a nose playing the A gap. We have another linebacker playing the A gap opposite the side. There we go. We've got our defensive tackle in that B gap. finally have an end that's going to play the C gap, and then yep, safety off, playing our D gap outside right there. So these are our home fits. So if we get, let's say, some sort of base blocking, something simple like inside zone where we don't have sniffers, we don't have fullbacks, we don't have pullers. These are the gaps that each player will be responsible for, and they're not going to change. So that's why we're just dipping our toe in the pool right now with something like inside zone, because we don't have to worry about things moving and responses and so on. So, you know, each of these players is looking at their visual key, their run pass key. You know, generally the defensive lineman, the guys down in the 3-point stance, they're looking at the pad tip of the blocker across from them. Our linebackers are looking at what's called the backfield triangle, or the near guard to the near back, in this case, just a running back to the quarterback. So they're going to read those in a way that lets them know a couple things. First, is this a run or a pass? And then, you know, what the specific block type is. It gets really detailed. So linebackers are drilled and trained and practiced to not only recognize that it's run blocking, but to read the specific block from the, from the guard there, from the center or whatever, because different blocks require different responses. So for something like this, where these are base blocks. We call them base blocks. Pretty straightforward. Man on across. The guys are going to attack their gaps. You know, as I said, it's your gap. You have to own it. You have to attack it.
Some teams coach this to leave the A gap linebacker in most schemes to make him a cutoff player. So you press this hole and make a cutoff of this player. Well, if you don't make a miss, the scheme can look a little silly, right? So
Yeah, and in the Browns, your Mike or your A gap defender opposite the nose tackle, he's a downhill player. They want these guys to read and get downhill pretty quickly. First, meet the ball carrier at the line of scrimmage. Also, they want their linebackers to attack, because the quicker the linebacker can attack or press the line of scrimmage, the quicker that the double team has to come off the defensive lineman. So we don't want our linebackers to deposit 5 yards into the backfield, but we also want to pull that double team off, because, you know, now they can shed a single blocker and make a play and play their gap more effectively. So that's a big part of it too. So yeah, these home fits are really straightforward. It's just a matter of recognizing your run pass key, the appropriate response, and getting downhill towards it.
Okay, let's look again now with a little mid zone and wide zone can kind of can really neighbor each other. It's really just some coaches teach it less stress laterally. Mm-hmm. But let's look at gaps. Let's go right to left again here. Now we do add the wrinkle of a tight end, inline tight end. So
yeah, we got. In fact, we have two to that side.
So this is more of what front are we looking at here? Is this your under front?
I know this will be an over front. We have two. You see our three technique, our big end are set towards the two tight ends or our solid side. So called the play in the huddle. Everyone echoed it. And then as soon as the offense broke their huddle, you know, someone called out the personnel and they said whatever the word is to let them know that it's the solid side is to the right side, probably just right, something like that. Again, because the play call included an over front, then we know our big end and our three technique are going to go to that side. And then, you know, the linebackers are going to adjust off the specific formation from there and where guys line up. So, yeah, we got our E-gap defender right there. You'll notice that we have a heads-up big end right here. So the reason that teams will take this strong end and put them heads up on the tight end part of me is because first they want to beat up on them a little bit. Mm-hmm. They don't want to give them a free release, you know, even on pass plays, but also they would just want to cause some they want to help keep the linebacker clean as well. So if plays go into this side, oftentimes that tight end is going to go block one of the linebackers, like your Mike, for example. So by putting that end heads up on him or in that six technique and then cutting across his face to the C gap, you make it more difficult for him to just jump through and get to that second level. Now he's got to work off this lineman that's cut in front of him and go from there. So, but they could also play games like on this play specifically. Vernon's going to have that C gap. Goodson's going to have the D gap. But if they wanted to play a little game on this, they could just as easily have Vernon push out into that D gap and have Goodson dip into that C gap there. You know, there are a ton of different ways you can do it. But again, these are, you know, these are home fits. These are base fits right now.
And yeah, and because, two, you're talking about exchanges. You know, teams like to read play side ends and option game. We'll talk about this more. I'm sure you and I, John, will do a specific episode on Lamar and what the Ravens present. But yeah, you know, if they're reading this player here, so imagine Carson Wentz is backed up, you're in a gun with an offset A running back here, and they're reading here. Sometimes you'll see, you know, scrape exchange stuff going on to influence a pull read from the quarterback with an automatic scrape player right here for him. There's a ton of different things that you can do here. Mm-hmm. And teams do go ahead and do. So let me see if I can – oh, nice. I can eliminate those. Yeah, just little examples of things. You talked about exchanging and moving gaps. But, yeah, this is the general look.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, again, we see our home fits here. We can go ahead and run this video. Again, we don't have gaps moving. You'll notice the linebackers get downhill very quickly here, particularly Taki Taki and then Harrison over there. And something that I think this play was a great example of showing why they want these linebackers to get downhill so quickly, because you're going to see that it quickly pulls the double teams off both the one technique and the three technique and allows them to sort of reestablish themselves, you know, versus just one blocker rather than two and continue to collapse down and get in the play. This is a really good play.
It is. And I want you to draw your eyes to, like, this isn't a moving zone necessarily, but it does show you that the A-gap isn't, you know, don't get keyed in on, like, this is where they are. This A-gap, as this man steps and this man steps, this A-gap turns into over here. He still has that gap. He's got to be able to read flow from these guys trying to work their mid-zone blocks. You know, what the offense is trying to do is run out the weak side. Right, we want to push everybody. I mean, look at, count it out, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 against, you know, they say over here, we think we can work a double team from the guard center, right? Take care of this 2i or one tech, whatever you want to call it. We'll take care of him, work this double team, be here, you know, form a push out here, and all of a sudden we got an alley. You know, you know, we got a seal here, and we're off to the races. That's what the offense is trying to do. So that's what they'll do. They'll try to run out the weak side on these schemes, but the Browns do a nice job, and this is why people are excited about Ronnie Harrison, is that he, you know, he can play a little box, right? He can play a linebacker. He's essentially playing linebacker here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's in the fit. He's playing a B gap, and this is a spot where we might see JOK. Yep. I'm down here. I'd also, depending on the fronts they're using, again, this could be Delp, but this could also be Johnson.
Yep, 100%.
It depends on where, you know, kind of where they're at with things. But, yeah, watch like Taki
double team downhill here. Oh, hell yeah, man. This backside double team doesn't get to the front side A-gap, and that leaves an alley, and it's a really nice job by your two DTs here eating up the double teams. That's what you draw your eyes to, is this is what you want. You want these guys to eat the double teams, keep those guys – at the second level clean, and that's what you get. Nice little play. Now we're going to look at fullbacks. So we have three straight play of a fullback creating a wrinkle to a play. So we'll run the wide zone view through so you can see the result of the play. Just the lead scheme.
Yep.
Leading on the play side, inside backer. Did you see 45 take Taki? Let's look at it from the tight view.
Okay, so before we get into anything else here, we got to understand that those first two plays were home fits. So our gaps aren't I guess they're moving post snap, and that the center and the guard move, so that the A gap's still right there, but you know, it moves to a different position on the field. In this spot, gaps can move from one side of the field to the other. Once we introduce the element of fullbacks and sniffers and basically off the ball guys in the backfield. So, you know, right now we have that tight end, so our close side is going to be to the defense's left. You know, we've got our three technique, our big end sent to that side. We have a total of six players on the line of scrimmage, which gives us seven gaps to cover. But that tight end in the backfield creates an eighth gap. The issue with this is we don't know where that gap's going to be. We've got to wait for him to declare by his backflow, pardon me, whether, you know, he's going to go wide, whether he's going to insert in that open B gap bubble, that open A gap bubble. He could be, you know, they could run a toss play. He could be taking it all around the edge. So we're adding another gap into the mix here, but we don't know where it's going to be.
You remember, if you guys think back, I'm just going to interrupt real quick, John, because it's funny. You talk about reading flow. Remember what San Francisco did, the first play from scrimmage in that Monday Night Football game, which was sold flow, one step, wind him back, kick out backside. You're just running a natural bend course. It's a wide zone, but then he's just bending it naturally back because they say, all right, these guys are going to read heavy. We're going to take advantage of it. And I think they took advantage of this rookie linebacker at the time, 51, and that play busted for yards. So it's tricky, you know. Offenses are trying to confuse.
Is that they interviewed Saleh after that, and he said that play came out of that FSIF stuff came right out of film study. He said because they flowed so hard off the fullback's first two steps that they knew that they could get him to overcommit and then wind the ball back with the tailback there.
And that's why he's one of the best doing it.
So now we've got eight players up in the fit here. So let's take the gaps again. Let's mark them off here before we go. Go from left to right again.
Let's
do it. So starting all the way over there, you see we've got Harrison. I believe that's Harrison. I'm sorry. We'll go left or right. My bad.
We'll stick with Harrison. That's okay. So he's your D defender here.
Yeah, we'll call him a D for now. We got our six technique, our heads up. Let's take him and see. Yeah. Got a linebacker to A. Yep. Got our one technique in the A right there. We got a B gap defender. Okay, go ahead and get the end, and you'll see we have one extra player. So in order to play gapped out, again, to have one defender for each gap, we have to have this extra player down here. So what's going to happen when we're not sure about where this extra gap from the backfield is going to insert itself on the line, we leave that up to the linebackers. So we could go way down the rabbit hole into the weeds with something like this, but these run fits are called lever spill lever fits. And I don't want to, I mean, if someone wants to ask something on ATI about that more specifically, I can get into it. But the idea is our linebackers are going to key that fullback's flow, and they're going to attack their gap in such a way that they have someone on his outside shoulder and his inside shoulder to ensure that we remain gapped out. So we call this, you know, it's leverage. We've got to have someone on his outside shoulder and his inside shoulder. So if he were to insert into that open B gap to our left side right here, then Taki Taki is going to attack the fullback's outside shoulder with his inside shoulder. We call it thick outside, thick inside. And then Goodson's going to attack or spill it by attacking fullback's inside shoulder like that. So it's leverage-based tackling. And again, if we were to just count off our gaps right now, you'll see that everything's covered right here. Looking, starting on the weak side, our C gap's good. Taki Taki's in perfect position here, attacking with a thick inside shoulder. You know, if the ball carrier were to try and bounce this out, his outside arm's free, he's good to go. Goodson's there quick enough. You know, on the inside shoulder, we would call this a spill path because he wants to attack that block in such a way that the ball carrier has to bounce out. You can see that's our nose tackle is getting mauled right there, but that's okay. Because Goodson came downhill pretty quickly right here. You know, going weak side. Every gap is covered. Every gap is full right now. You can see our end.
Like quarter gusting from the backside, playing and one of his better games.
And that's another reason that you stick your you'll stick your end in a six technique heads up over that tight end, because oftentimes, based on the blocking scheme, he can sneak inside and he can backdoor plays like we just saw right there. So look, go ahead.
No, just the next play. This is Jacksonville, another fullback insertion. I mean, it's not a fullback, true fullback. It's not going to be, you know, 21 personnel, but it's just a tight end who's doing the job of a fullback here. So we'll go through the fit again. So it looks like we're probably having some sort of man-to-man chase here going on.
That's going to be your base right now. Then Joseph will be in your keep going. Joseph will be fitting in between the right tackle and the sniffer.
Yep.
Or the F off right there.
What you guys call them, sniffers? All right. So that's your general look.
So there are home fits as of now. So if we just get some sort of base run where gaps aren't moving, you know, we don't have pullers, then that's our fits are going to look like this. Now, the issue with sniffers is that,
and again, audio form, sniffers are your tight ends and and fullbacks and wing positions, right?
Yeah, a tight end that's off the line of scrimmage, generally like a line outside and behind or inside the tackle to either side of the play. So not only can they insert at any point along the line of scrimmage, but one of the NFL's favorite zone scheme plays is your split or your windback play. So what they'll do is they'll run zone and then have the tailback cut the ball all the way backside. They'll take that sniffer, that Y off. They'll have them run all the way across the formation and block the end right there and block the end, pardon me, on that side to create a lane that the tailback can cut through there. So this, again, could be something that we talk about in – maybe a later episode, or if you want to get on ATI on the Orange and Brown Report, but we have something called fallback fits we use for that. But that takes a little more, so we're not going to see it here. But that's your most common approach, and it's just a very specific way in which you fit this. But our principles remain the same in terms of levers, spill levers. So our linebackers and Carl Joseph, in this case, our safety, they're the ones that are going to adjust to this moving gap there. So again, we have to attack him in such a way that we have someone attacking his inside shoulder as a spill player and his outside shoulder as sort of the contain player. So in this case, our A-gap defender, our Mike, 56, pardon me, across, you're going to see when he recognizes the play. He's going to get downhill. He's attacking it with his inside shoulder again because we want to force it back to his help. And you can see Joseph did a really good job of just squeezing around right here and, getting onto that, number 80 is inside shoulder. And, I think he pointed. So there was probably some verbal call that was made there. In fact, there is a, when they have a Y off like that, they'll have an alert on, like they'll say alert fall. Mm-hmm. And then based on his movement, because your linebackers don't have time to read that backfield triangle we talked about. So going from the guard then to the backflow. So the guy to number 80 side, Joseph, in this case, he's not even messing around with reading a guard right there. He's looking at number 80 the whole way.
Yeah, his eyes on.
As soon as he steps across, he's yelling like fall, fall, fall or something similar to let the other two linebackers
see him really know. He points real quick.
Yeah, watch. He points. Yeah, as soon as it happens, he's pointing. He's making a verbal call as that goes, which tells Smith then, okay, I need to immediately get my eyes to him and fit on the correct shoulder right there.
This is teach tape. It's a thing of beauty, really, because Larry keeps his outside arm free. That's a nice
phenomenal leverage.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Let's talk Colts here. They're going to insert a wide receiver here.
Yeah. So I thought this play was interesting because Stefanski will do this with Landry. Landry do this a lot to set him up almost in the backfield like that, and then he'll insert himself somewhere along the line or crack. But again, it's the same idea here. So this wide receiver represents a moving gap. We don't know where he's going to insert. Probably going to be on this side of the field, but who knows here? So we have to treat him like that sniffer, that Y off, or like a fullback here. Going from left to right again, you can see our home fits here: C gap, A gap, A gap, A gap, B gap. You'll see that again, we are playing gapped out here. So we have, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So we have 9 gaps to account for when all said and done. So we got a lot of players in the box right here. So everyone, our second level defenders, particularly to this side, they're going to fit off where 83 inserts and where he blocks. And again, we want someone on his inside shoulder, someone on his outside shoulder. So our spill player, you can see him pushing inside. It's a pretty good job right there. Looks like this is just some sort of zone windback. They're trying to cut it back there.
95 is pretty good, so that helps.
Yeah, he is pretty good. Yeah, you can see he bends the corner, causes havoc as he tends to do right there. But if you really focus on Harrison, and in this case we have our nickel in the fit right there, number 26 as well. You can see with the way that they attack him. Again, proper leverage, proper shoulder.
You can see eyes on. He's following him. It's the same thing. He's reading run.
Tracking. Yep. Again, this is really it isn't sexy, but this is the nuts and bolts stuff of playing good run defense. Particularly schematically sound run defense. It's just these concepts right here. I mean, we could talk for hours about the specific techniques and so on. But really, this is just it. When you're talking fits, particularly gapped out fits, you just need to ensure that your every gap is covered and that guys are getting where they need to be when these gaps move. So
now Pittsburgh throws in a last wrinkle with a pull here. We have not seen anybody pull, gap down, and pull. So you're going to get a gap down, gap down, gap down, gap down, and a kick out from the guard as counter. Just gun counter on this place, backside defensive end here. So, this will be play side. So, anyway.
So, again, we know that linemen can pull as well. So far we've looked at a wide receiver in the backfield. We looked at a sniffer. We looked at a true fullback. But, as you said, linemen will pull. They often do pull. So, plays like one back power and kick, counter, more of your gap stuff. So, again, They represent a moving gap here. Got a D gap there.
Gotta have a D gap, folks.
Yeah. So same idea here. So this is a moving gap. So what's going to happen when the play runs is we're going to go from having three gaps on the right side on the defense's right side of the ball to only two gaps here. So again, our defensive linemen can't adjust the moving gaps. It's on our linebackers to do that. So this is something else that will that'll involve a verbal call of some sort. So Taki's reading that guard to the tailback's flow to the direction which he steps. So as soon as he sees that pull happen, he's yelling pull, 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 and then he's sliding towards the pull to adjust basically to match that moving gap because we want to remain gapped out. Again, one player for each gap. And that's gonna tell the other linebackers then that they need to get out there as well. And the goal is, again, just to get one player on each of the puller's shoulders, one on his outside shoulder, one on his inside shoulder.
Here's a good example of an exchange. You're going to see Sheldon jump into A, and Phillips goes B responsible. You see them bring into C.
So Phillips is just taking over Sheldon's gap right there.
Yep. He's going to fly it out. Scraping over top. Yep, you'll see it once we run this through. All right.
There you go. Yeah, so what Phillips wants to do is fit on the puller's inside shoulder. So ideally, your end to that side. Well, sometimes they'll attack the block in a way that forces the ball carrier outside. We call that a spill. Other times, they'll attack it like this, where they force the ball to bounce back inside. And this is generally called a box or a vice. So he's going to attack that puller in a way, again, with his inside shoulder, so a thick inside shoulder, to force the ball carrier to cut it back inside. Then you've got Harrison, as you can see, playing his – shooting his B gap right there. And then Phillips is just tracking that puller. And again, he just wants to fit on the puller's inside shoulder. And by doing that, you can see that every single gap is a cover for right there. We've got Harrison in his B gap. We got Rogotson outside. And then we've got Phillips being the player to adjust to that moving gap.
Thing of beauty. More teach tape.
Yeah, leverage-based run fits and leverage-based tackling. You know, get a defender on each of the each of the ball carrier's hips. That's
the general gist. That's gaps. That's gap run fits. That's techniques. We are moving along. We have got a pretty good understanding of what's going on up front from a basic perspective. Alignments, gaps. We can get into some of the what John and I call. We can go out in the weeds with some of this stuff. And eventually we will. This is the very beginning of what will be a long Chalk Talk series that we will go. And we'll get even more picky as we go through this, looking at one specific thing for, maybe a half hour one night. But, this is the general gist. Go ahead.
Did we ever get that question clarified?
I did not see that question come up again. So if I think it was Rob that asked it earlier, if he wants to come back maybe and ask in here, and I can answer it in this video form later, more than willing to do that. Let me know, Rob, and we'll take care of that for you, man. I think we might have answered it with our next slide, but that's okay. Another question at the beginning that came up was talking about run fits, options on limiting the success of Lamar and company. We will do a Lamar special at some point. I promise you that. And then the question here also came up from Longer for how much Notre Dame alignment Rover will JOK see in this defense, or is it a traditional will? I think that they will probably deem it as a traditional will, but it'll be a lot of the same responsibilities, right? Like we're seeing Ronnie Harrison do a little bit of it there. And
I think that they're going to try and get him on the field however they can. So I could definitely see situations where, instead of using a true nickel as, when they're nickel covers, instead of bringing in a third cornerback, they use JOK out there. Particularly, I feel like against teams like Baltimore, for example, he would be phenomenal in that spot, versus what they like to do in Lamar and so on. So I think we could see him in several different places.
I agree. We're a little over an hour. We're trying to keep these things way shorter, but hey, we're going through this thing, man. It happens. We're going to have these things be a little longer than we expect. So, it's a part of the process with this. Hopefully you're getting something from it. As usual, if you have any suggestions or questions, hit me up on Twitter, hit us up at the OBR in the Ask the Insider section. More than willing to hear suggestions about how to improve this thing. We're trying to make it as descriptive as possible for you folks on the audio side who can only listen to this. Hopefully you got some understanding of techniques and gaps so that you know those things. Some of the stuff you do need to see, though, that is part of football. It can't be played without vision on. Almost all the time, those visual aids will help you understand something. So, John, thanks again, my friend.
And thanks for having me again, Jake.
Yeah, no problem. John will be on vacation next week, so we're going to talk about basic offensive structure, personnel groups and personnel packages, sub-packages, all that stuff. Some of the stuff we've done here, we will talk about that on the offensive side. So it'll be a fun study. So it might be me. I might just do it myself. I might bring on a different guest. John, have a great vacation. Thank you to everybody for joining us and sticking with us. I've had about 50 or so. This is definitely something you have to be interested in. So I hope you're finding it interesting. If this is your thing, you're trying to learn football, it's always going to be up. You can always refer to it if you would like. Again, appreciate you guys joining us and checking out the pod every week. We'll have a new guest tomorrow. I think we're going to bring Lane Atkins on tomorrow to talk about end of the week topics at the end of OTAs here. So if you want to hear anything from Lane or have some specific questions for Lane, feel free to fire those over to him tomorrow. So we'll be back around this time at that point. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us. We also had a fun guest come join us that we will post for our bonus weekend contents. Keep your eye out for that. Again, thank you to John taking an hour of his evening to do this and preparing all the stuff as he does. He does great stuff, great work for you. I hope you enjoy it. And that's a wrap. We'll catch you guys tomorrow. And as usual, go Browns.
Go Browns.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.